Hey, everybody. Before we start the show, we want to say thanks to our special friends. Sapori Cafe and Catering, the most delicious place to have lunch and the most delicious catering you're going to get in Rochester. Check out at SaporiRochester.com. Three Heads Brewing, it's delicious. You can buy it anywhere. Fine beer is sold. And if you come to a show to Carlson, put some in your glass. Iron Smoke Whiskey, soon to be America's favorite whiskey. Applewood Smoked Whiskey and Rattlesnake Rosie's Apple Pie Whiskey, available now.
Everybody, welcome back to an all-new comedy at the Carlson Cast. Yeah, it's CarlsonCast.com, everybody. His grandma slipped a 20 to the Monroe Community College admissions officer to get into school there, Vinnie Paulino. We'll take our time with that. Brian Ball, you didn't go to college. What are you talking about?
I didn't.
I dropped out.
There's Russ Johnson. I got in on my merits because I'm so smart. You can tell because the news in the papers. Cam lived in a... under a car in a college for a while. And of course, there's Earl David Reed, everybody.
I like it when Ross is so proud of his own joke that he fucks it up.
Yeah, lived under a car in a college. Can't tell. Okay. All right. Well, welcome back to the Comedy at the Carlson Cast. I love the shows when we get to welcome a guest back.
Yes.
Not only do we get to know them a little bit and we got kind of our traditional stuff out of the way, we could focus on having a little bit more of an interesting, silly time today. Our guest returning is Earl David Reed, or EDR if you're nasty. He's going to be right here.
if you're nasty.
We're excited about it.
And I feel like we barely scratched the surface last time with him.
Yeah, there's some interesting facts about him that I've learned this week that I got to ask him about, so that I had no idea about the last time.
Very good guy.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a very good interview the last time.
He does
radio, which in itself is a skill. Like, stand-up and radio, a lot of people think that they go together. They do not.
No.
They do not. They are two completely different animals, and the way he attacks them both is really interesting. So I give him a lot of credit for that. Oh. Well, look at that. That's cool. Oh, my God, guys, it was an earthquake.
What?
If you're listening to this on one of our fine podcasting outlets, you do not get that joke.
Earthquake Shoeless
Joe. That's a special bonus joke for just the visual watchers.
That is a bonus joke for those of you who are watching this live on YouTube.
They're called visual watchers. I just made up that term.
Visual watchers.
Yep,
you should be stoned in the streets for that joke. Wow.
What if you're stoned off the street?
You should be stoned and left for dead in the streets. Okay, let's talk about some important things that are happening. Can you do me a favor and hit my camera or my computer cam?
Yes.
There it is. Tonight, baby.
Tonight.
The Rochester Roast Battles. Tonight at 8 o'clock.
The microphone will actually be on fire during the show.
Probably not. For insurance reasons, but it's going to be in the Rickles room tonight. We're very, very excited about it. We have, you come back to me, bud. And we have some very, very exciting performers. Why don't you hit that again for me? And let's take a look at the bracket, shall we? Oh, look who's on there. Brian Ball.
Brian Ball, everybody.
Alphabetical order got me again.
Brian Ball. He's going up against Sam Labuti from the Rochester Interloop blog, so that should be kind of fun. Mm-hmm. And let's see who else we have on here. We got Todd Gerson from Hate This Podcast. He's been on the show before.
Sherelle
Kinder, very funny. I am very much looking forward to seeing my friend Carl, Carl Heberger from Hate These Podcasts, my second favorite podcast in the world, is going to be competing against the guy who does clean comedy. So that should be very interesting. I'm excited.
Selection gods have done you well on that one.
Yeah, every matchup here was pulled out of the hat. So what's going to happen is they're all going to go toe-to-toe, and they are going to do their worst to each other. Verbal swords.
Mm-hmm.
Verbal pistols at 8 p.m.
I can't use an actual sword?
No.
No.
Nope. You can't even bring that Morningstar. I told you to leave it in the car. But we're excited about it. I personally... I'm very pumped because what I get to do for this whole thing is sit in the back of the room as a judge
and enjoy
with my pal Ross Johnson.
Hey, everybody.
Because Ross is going to be one of our judges.
It's true.
You could show Ross. He's on the show. He's sitting there on the couch today.
Yeah. There we go.
That's my judging you face.
He's judging you right now.
You make that face to me all the time.
And also...
Everybody makes that face at you all the time.
Also joining me as a judge tonight, I'm very excited to announce... the owner of the comedy company, 30-year comedy veteran, and one of the guys that I have literally traveled up and down all over this great state with doing telling jokes, Danny Liberto.
Mr. Danny Liberto!
Yeah. Liberto is coming to hang out,
announce
which always makes my heart happy. I'm not going to lie to you. Whenever Danny's there, I'm having a good time.
He's always funny whether he means to be or not.
I don't know what that means. He really is a hysterical person.
He's one of my favorite people to hang out with.
The thought of sitting next to Ross on one side and having Danny on the other side, I can only imagine
you're gonna get
how
caught.
Hard I'm going to laugh.
You're going to get caught in a singularity.
It's literally going to be a seam of time is going to just ripple.
You're going to get Thanos.
Oh.
Mr. Johnson.
Too soon.
Mr. Johnson, I don't feel so good. Mr. Liberto. That's an Avengers joke. We're cool guys around here. Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a rough one.
And all the sex.
There ain't none left for the rest of you. We getting it all, baby. So we're very, very excited about that going on at the club. Now, I got to talk about this other thing that happened. One of the most nicest, kindest, sweetest people in the world did something very kind and nice and sweet for me. I did not ask for this. I had nothing to do with this. I didn't know this was happening, but I have to thank her because it was incredibly kind and nice of her. And if you've been to Comedy at the Carlson and you've walked through the bar, you've seen the portraits of all the comedians, all of them dead. I should point that out. Every single one of them is dead.
All dead.
The same artist, painted my portrait in the same freaking size.
Are you dead?
I think she knows something. She must know something.
She got access to your medical records.
I better
get a head start on this now.
In fairness, it's hard to tell sometimes.
Which is what?
If you're alive or dead.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Actually, that's a Brian joke. That's more of a Brian Ball joke.
Yeah,
I'll
really
save that for when Brian gets his.
I was going to say, which one of us looks like he's decomposing right now?
I think I'll save that.
I think I'll even say I look more dead than you do.
Yeah. Oh my god! If you were just to lay still.
Yeah.
Like how many times
a
week
in a wheelbarrow? Just
how many times a week does your wife put a mirror under your nose?
More than you'd think.
Yeah.
Just be still for a second right now. But not on me. On Brian. There you go. Right? That's horrifying.
Dead as fuck.
That's horrifying.
He goes, that is fucked. So, without any further ado, I would like to thank Lorraine Staunch and Staunch Art. Is it Staunch, right?
Yes.
Staunch Art.com for painting this lovely portrait of me. You can show my computer again.
Tom Hardy.
I gotta say,
Pat O'Brien.
She works very hard at capturing people's essences, but I don't think I'm that smiley.
No, the only time I've seen you smile that much is at a Waffle House.
Mm-hmm. It's about right. But that is me. My head, actual size in the photo.
It's a handsome suit, Vinny. You got it.
That is a handsome suit.
Thank you. I believe it's supposed to be my blue velvet blazer. I can tell from the tuxedo piping on it.
Is it a Dorian Gray thing? If I burn it, will you die?
We'll never know, because apparently
we can find out.
I mean, only
no, you can't. That is my portrait. I've been immortalized.
Do we need to explain that? Because I feel like the three of us and Dennis Miller are the only people who get Dorian Gray jokes. Is that
that's about right?
Do we need to?
That's right, babe. There was a painting of him that he would put all of his sin and evil onto, and he would stay perfectly clean, just like the painting. And the painting would get older and uglier, babe.
That joke is longer and murkier than the House of Plantagenet, Vinnie Paulino. This is just going to be
See,
Dennis
this
Miller.
Is this yes. is this is terrible.
This is the worst show we've ever done, I think.
Well, I don't know.
But
I don't
a
know.
Beautiful painting.
And there's my
there's
picture. There,
work
I would
of
like
art.
To thank the artist. There's Lorraine right there in the hallway with all bunch of the paintings she's done. We love her to death. And thank you, Lorraine. I really truly appreciate it. It was very kind of you to do. Completely unexpected, and I am honored. I am very honored, so thank you for that. Now, folks, down to business. Before we bring in Earl David Reed for our interview this morning, I want to take 1 second and tell you that we're going to give away some tickets today.
No, are we?
Yes.
We haven't done that in a little bit.
We've been selling out shows. Tickets have been flying, and they still are. There's not very many left, and I had to beg to see. I've been asking. And today he goes, all right, I got these ones left. So I have
two pairs of tickets.
I got two pairs of tickets to the 7:30. I got two to the 7 o'clock, and I got two to the 9:30.
9 o'clock.
9 o'clock, yes. Two to the 9 o'clock. I'm sorry. We're going to be giving away. So how do we want to do this, Brian? Do we want to have some fun with this? Should we have people text in to get their tickets?
I think we should.
Okay. Well, if you're watching this live, and this offer is only good while the show is live, text in your name and text in if you prefer the 7 or the 9.
Yep.
And
we're just going to randomly pick them?
I'm going to randomly pick them.
Or are we going to make somebody say something stupid?
All I would like you to do is just say Vinny is handsome in the text message.
So you want people to text. So just text in a random lie.
Yep.
And whoever has the best lie.
I'll tell you what. How about this? Whoever does the best roast joke about me this morning.
Oh, that's good.
Or Brian. Anybody on the show. Anybody on the show.
Yeah, anybody.
That's fun. Text in your best roast joke of anybody on the show. 585-484-0265. You can win tickets to come see Earl David Reed tonight at Comedy at the Carlson. Now, if you're listening to this later and you still feel like texting in a roast joke, if they're any good, we'll still laugh and read them.
Yeah, this is going to be going on for a
bit. Just remember that Cam is sensitive. So
just remember.
Just don't call him a big galoot. He gets very upset about that.
Yeah. Hey, Brian, I told you that's my word.
And
galoot.
He also doesn't appreciate people bringing up the car situation.
Yep, yeah. Absolutely.
His past living arrangements. So text in your best roast joke, 585-484-0265 to win tickets.
Passed.
And we are going to be back in just a minute or two with Earl David Reed.
Lives under an SUV now.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are live back in studio with our guest today, EDR, Earl David Reed. There he is, folks.
Always good to be back here. This is fantastic. I love this place. And you guys have grown in the show. I've been checking you out and following out and about. You guys are doing great. It's a good gig.
We're not. We are not complaining in the slightest. We're pretty happy about it, actually.
Yeah, you got your little thing going here.
But you can continue saying good things about us.
Well, listen, look, if you sucked... I don't even know in this day and age if I'm allowed to mention how bad things are.
Would prefer it if you do. That's all I ever want to talk about.
It's really weird because I don't do political stuff or anything else like that. But now it doesn't matter. Anytime you say anything negative, it immediately goes to being something political.
It's immediately a hate crime.
So I can't. Yeah, I don't like. I said, let's say, I don't like this show. Well, what's your problem with it? It's because the hosts are white. No. Everything's fine. Don't worry about it. It's all good.
I just feel like there's no place for any type of criticism left in the world. Am I wrong?
I think you might be right. And like I said, I avoid it completely on the stage. I think what a lot of people you know, like I avoid, because I think people want an escapism. I think they come out to get away from that.
You might be right. So.
You know, and I think, and I'm not good enough as much. I'm one of the few people in this country that don't, will admit to you, I don't know what's going on politically. So why am I going to get up there and make a fool out of myself and act like I know what's going on? I know what I can make fun of, but then again, I don't even know why I'm making fun of it. So,
and you know, I feel like the weird thing with politics right now, you used to be able to make like non-divisive political jokes. Mm-hmm. You could make fun of a politician just, you know, for whatever reason.
Will Rogers, we're talking way back in old school.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's all based on it. Now it's like, you know.
Now it's sports.
Right.
You pick your team and you stick with that team no matter what they do.
The second, if there's a joke either way,
you're
going to lose half your crowd.
That's
it. Completely polarized.
And it's like, I don't have millions of people that are following me. If I had like 5 million people that follow me religiously and I said something and I lost a million, I can live with 4 million.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. But now when you go on stage and there's like 250 people in a room and you divide that room and there's, once you as a comedian.
And they're all going to walk past you at the door on the way out.
Yeah, it's like, you know. Because I don't even know. This is the thing I don't understand. It's like people getting up and walking out of something. It's not even, I can't imagine coming out, getting ready, getting paid. Paying to do something to go in there and then call myself allegedly being offended and getting up to walk out. When people walk out and stuff like that, it's because they want to let you know they're making a statement. They don't really want to leave.
I got up and walked out of that Land of the Lost movie. That was pretty bad.
Well, let me tell you, I walked out of that, and then I sat through that, Land of the Lost, and I walked out of that movie, too.
Yeah.
I might have hit you on the way out.
Yeah.
Right?
There's some movies you sit there and you go, geez, you know, I've done 3 pilots that can't get on, and I'm sitting through Land of the Lost. You know, but it's one of those things where it's like, you know, people get up and they walk out of something. I don't think I've ever walked out of something because of something that was said. I don't really know what I stand for.
I've only walked out of one movie legitimately in my life. But I think you're right. I think you're right. But what I'll take it a step further. What I don't understand is the mentality that someone has to have if they hear someone insult a politician that they feel moved to get up and walk out.
I wish I had
a politician.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It all depends. Like if I
of
sit
all
there,
the things, we're not talking about your mother here.
No, if you're sitting there and I go, man, listen, dude, I think a guy that looks, you're a good looking guy. I think a guy that looks as good as you could definitely do much better than her. Holy crap. You know? And that guy gets offended because I made fun of him. I get that.
Sure.
But you know, it's like if I come over here and what's your favorite football team? You have a favorite team?
The Jets.
Okay, the Jets.
Ugh.
And let's say I make fun of somebody on the Jets. Now, you might argue.
Where do you
back
want to start with? How Sam Darnold looks like a Flintstones character?
Yeah, you get that. Or Le'Veon Bell. It's like, okay, gee whiz. He's just won his suspension away from being an undercarriage on a car. You know, it's that's funny. Write that down because you might hear that again.
Something about Adam Gase's googly eyes.
Yeah, you'll probably go, oh, I don't know, man. Hey, man. You know, you're not going to get
that's
up.
That's it. I'm out of here.
You're out of here and walk out of here. You know, you have a better chance of meeting Le'Veon Bell than you do probably a major politician that would be made fun of.
Yeah,
it's
his make-a-wish.
And and now the funny thing is now
scheduled
is,
for next week.
And now it's like the funny thing, the politicians are doing stuff that's so.
Yeah, and
you can't leave it alone. It's not like, oh, this guy got caught speeding. I mean, we're talking about grabbing crotches
And that politician don't give a rat's ass about you.
No, please.
And, you know, the point isn't to be political. The point is to make fun of the system. And that's the thing that I don't think people get. And I think that culturally, we're all just too upset about everything to realize it.
Mm. And I think when you go to a comedy club now, it's unbelievable because my whole job is making an escapism from that.
Right.
You know, I was last night, standing ovation. Mm-hmm. It was great. I didn't even hear that some other guy came up to me and he says, hey, man, great show. And there was a guy from a kid there. He goes to RIT. Okay. Now, as an older guy, I have a tendency to make fun of younger people. Like, if you're 30 and under, only based on the fact that they don't have any life experience and stuff like that.
And they're terrible.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So people like me.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So it's like, I kind of make fun of that. So some guy walked out, took his picture of me, goes, oh, there was a guy mad at you in the bathroom. And I go, what? He goes, that freaking comedian. I go, what was he mad at? Well, he said you made fun of RIT. So I go, well, there's no defense against that. Sure. You know what I mean? I mean, I know what to stay away from, but I mean, I can't stay away from anything. And it was, and if anything, I didn't make fun of RIT at all. I made fun of the fact that, well, you know, it's a ritzy school, sure. It's expensive. Mm-hmm. I said, well, one of the things I said is, boy, you go to RIT, he says he goes to RIT. I go, you go to RIT? And he's going, yeah. He goes, well, how much it costs a year? How much does it cost to go a year there? Considering the fact that you don't have a mediocre actor's mother, sure. You know,
costs about half as much as Lori Loughlin paid.
Right. So I said it was funny. So and I just kind of goof around with everything. And if anything, I was the whole night making fun of the fact that it's an expensive school.
Right.
He must be a smart guy.
Sure.
Well, see, that other guy's interpretation of that is just totally different. Like in my world, right. I'm not thinking anyone's going to walk out of there upset, and I'm not thinking they're walking out of upset about
Wow, that's a good RIT. School for a very good expensive school.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you right. know, because I, you know, then I point out the fact that it's expensive. You know, I've never been to RIT. I don't live here. I already know what the you know, stereotypically what it's supposed to be like.
What's the biggest riff between a joke's intention and the way an audience has taken it that you've ever seen? Like,
I tell anybody that does this as a young person, you win that audience over.
Yeah.
Okay. And once they like you,
yeah.
you can almost get away with anything.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Last night, this is I'll tell you this. I can't even believe this happened last night. This is amazing. This is why I know comedy. I always tell these people, comedy has never let me down. It's put food on my plate. It's always given me a place to go. Wonderful gig like that. I wouldn't be sitting here if I right. didn't have the. Last night there was a guy in the front row. It was a white dude. He was there with a black woman. So I said, "Wow." I said, "You know, how you doing? Is that your wife?" He goes, "Yes." How long have you been, been together? He's like, "Now, well, where'd you meet her?" He goes, "You know, I'm she's from Africa. I met her in Africa, and and we came back and got married." So I said, "Oh, so you met your wife in Africa and you brought her back here? That's great." I said, "You know, that's slavery where I come from. You know, now right? that can go dangerous in any direction."
Absolutely.
I said, "You know, and because the other couple I mentioned earlier that they met online, and it was actually a 26-year-old kid."
Right.
You know, I said, look, you're under 30. This is how lazy you are. You go online, you find the woman, you know, that you want and you date. Meanwhile, this guy has to go all the way to Africa. Right. How old are you, sir? He's 41 years old. See, that's the difference between your age. This man made it. He went all the way to Africa.
That's
to
really
come
funny.
Back as a white guy to come back with a. I said, do you know how much clicking he had to do to meet the right woman? Now, that could go dangerously wrong.
Very much. Very
it could
much
go
so.
Horribly wrong.
Not doing that joke. Right. Not opening with it.
No. Right. She liked it. She thought it was funny. Uh-huh. He thought it was funny. It's basic. And they all thought it was funny. Uh-huh. But at that point in the show, I got to a point where I'm like, you know, I befriended that audience.
Right.
And that's why I keep telling these young people, don't go up there and do your jokes and say, well, I got 10 minutes. I got 15 minutes. I got 20 minutes. It doesn't mean anything.
Right.
Doesn't mean anything. Well, how do you, like I was just telling the gentleman out there, well, how do you know you're done? Well, because I started with this joke and I ended with this joke, and that's the time I'm supposed to do. In between that time, man, you gotta work on who you are.
Well, that's
otherwise
my
jokes don't mean anything.
That's my favorite thing about your act. The great thing about Earl, that you folks don't know if you're on the fence about seeing him, get a ticket because his show is very in the moment. You're an in-the-moment kind of a guy. You don't just do material at people. You are interacting with the crowd, and you're making it fun for everybody, and you're not an attack comic. You're a fun comic.
I'm an interactive comic because people go, a lot of people say, well, do you pick on people? And then I go, no, I'm interactive with it. If I make something funny and it's about you, there's a whole difference. That's a whole other area that we have to be careful about now. Because no one wants to be picked on or bullied, which is the big word now, you know.
Right.
But that's it. For my shows is different most of the time, all the time, because of what's there. And I have a feeling that people have a better experience. That's why I get a lot of standing ovations, because people realize at the end of it, my goodness, we were the show. If we weren't here, he wouldn't have been able to do what he does.
Yeah, and I what you do, like you said, it's interactive, but it's not like your stereotypical crowd work.
Right.
Like, I always think, like, you like to play around.
Yeah.
But it's not your stereotypical, you know, I'm going to talk to this person for 5 minutes, I'm going to talk to this person for 5 minutes.
Well, it's whatever happens, way. And I yeah. react to it. Now, I do, well, you know, one-man show with the secret amount of success, with the big stage set and everything else, which my agent in Vegas is thinking about changing it to EDR 360, because I worked the whole room, worked around the room and come back to the same spot. And
interesting.
It's different. So he likes that angle better. And, you know, and at the end, you know, I wrap it up right. Well, I won't say the end because people watch it, but you'll have to come out and
there's
see
There's a
it.
Tiger, though.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
a tiger.
And so it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, when you've been doing it, I've been doing it close to 30 years. And, you know, when I see a bunch of people just going up there and going, because there are tons of comedians. There are thousands of them. Everybody's a comedian. Everyone is. There's no, you know what it is? The thing is, what is it? There's no stolen valor when it comes to comedy.
There really isn't.
You know, there's no
be.
Stolen valor, and there should be, because it waters down the product. You go to Joey Schmuckface's Bar and Grill and see their comedy night. Okay, and
I've
it doesn't
that.
Compare
I've
to something
that.
that's pro.
Can
you can't
we
say
bring
you're
back
cop.
The stocks with the tomatoes for these people? Can we well, bring those back?
Well, here's what we really need to do. It needs to be, if everyone wants to have these comedy nights, I would say to these people that are booking them or putting them together, it's like anything else. Find out the guy's credentials. Find out if he's any good. Find out if you want to see it. Just don't have a guy say, hey, look, I'm going to bring in three comics, and since you don't do comedy, you're going to take that guy's word for it.
Yeah,
it's you know, and it, because that's what's watering it down. I was watching an episode of Crashing. I never really watch any comedy stuff on TV because I don't want to be influenced by it.
Right.
But they were showing Crashing on HBO mm-hmm. with Pete mm-hmm. Holmes, yeah. And the woman that books that is a woman named Esty, and she's actually in the show.
Right. And what's her phone number?
Well, dig this. She put me in Vegas. Because it's all a networking thing. A buddy of mine, John Joseph, who's a comedian. Who's
I'm not hearing numbers, Earl.
Okay. It's really good. Can't get it. I wouldn't listen. I'm not going to give you that number.
I'm just kidding.
It's funny. He, and matter of fact, he recommended me to her. I had to go through him to get through her to be able to play that club in Vegas. I played other ones in Vegas. But she's on the show, too. Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me. And Pete Holmes, the main character, comes off the stage. He goes, how'd you like my act? And she says, well, you know what? I got 1,000 white guys talking about nothing. I got a lot of guys and white guys talking about nothing. And when I thought about it, I don't know what part I hung on to the most, but I was like, wow. You know, you can go and white guys being a euphemism as just everyday kind of guys, not particularly in my mind, just white guys.
Sure.
But it's funny, you can go to open mic night and there's 30 or something, 40 guys there, all trying to make their way, all trying to do that thing. And the funny thing is, if you can go on stage once, you can go on your Facebook and so, yeah, so I'm a stand-up comedian, you know.
You
and
could
you
have
can't,
your
you know,
comedian blank page.
You do oh, that yeah. as a cop, people will kill you. You do it as a soldier, people will kill you. Comedy's one of the things that still doesn't get respect as an art form, you know. And if you're a young guy and you go on stage and you have another job, don't tell other people you have another job. Because they're paying to see you.
Right.
You know, they don't want to go. They don't want to, you know, and I'm at my other job doing whatever. They don't care about that. They believe they're seeing a full-time dude doing a full-time gig.
Let me ask you a question. This is just your opinion. What do you think the biggest sin committed by people trying to get into the comedy business is? What do you think the biggest mistake that blows up stuff
Shorts
for them before they
stage.
Even get started?
Well, everyone thinks that everyone thinks they should get paid for it right away. At some point, someone goes, well, you know, you get paid for it. No one wants to put in the work. And I got to be honest with you. I don't even know what the work is. The work is in quotes. The work is whatever you put into it. The work is whatever you get back. The work is your reaction.
You hear
to the
that
work
a lot from
different.
People. You it's hear that a lot. Works. They work so hard.
Yeah. I don't know what the work is. There's no recipe for the work. Okay? You put it in. You might find something happens. Something may not happen. This is 90% no, 80% well, we'll see what happens, and 2% yes. That's how this is. That 100%?
172%. 172 is what that is.
You know, I went on a limb and I'm so, can I say shitty? I'm just bad at math. And all of a sudden I just went out there. I got preachy about it. But
I can't believe I added that up properly in my head.
I can see when you started saying numbers, you were
well,
like,
well, usually,
made a
you know, when
mistake.
People are in trouble is when their eyes roll up into the top of their head. I'm like, you know, but that's what it is. There's no recipe for the work. There's no rules. There's no rhyme. There's no reason. Talking to a cool gentleman out here. A little while ago, he started by
Shoeless Joe.
He
Shoeless
be,
Joe, come in here. Say hello to the camera.
This guy could be a star.
Come sit next to Earl.
He could be a star tomorrow just by someone seeing him on this podcast and go, we're looking for this guy to do whatever, you know. And it may have nothing to do with comedy.
And I want to vouch for him. He makes great coffee.
Yeah, see. But let's say someone sees him and goes, hey, we want you to be on whatever. And he's on whatever. Uh-huh. All of a sudden, because they just saw him. And then he goes, oh, by the way, I do stand-up. Okay. Well, his stand-up could be mediocre at best. But if he's on something that
if we're being generous,
if he's on something that people can relate to, they will come out and they will see this guy, and they will sit through anything that he has to say.
All right, get out of here, Joe.
You're making me nervous now. Get out of here.
I just wanted you to be able to have like a
make sure my wallet's still there. You know, white people steal too. You know
that kid does.
He's a skater. They steal all kinds of stuff.
But see, and that's the thing.
Mainly
there's no
stickers
rules
and stuff. I don't know what they do.
So I always say to people, I go, well, why should anyone pay you to do that? I mean, because I don't know what that answer is, because I'm still trying to figure out why people say, well, why would anyone pay you to do it? I don't know. Well, I just know that they do.
It's the same reason anybody pays anybody for anything. You shouldn't get paid for it until the person paying you is certain they're going to get something back out of it.
Well, that's the thing. It's a good point, because a lot of people believe, now they believe, hey, I'm standing up there, you're not standing up there, you know, where's my money? And I go, the weird thing is, you don't even know how to put a price on any of that stuff. Yeah,
right.
You know?
They wanted you to stand up there.
Well, okay, so let's say you're in a show. How much you think you should get for 15 minutes of comedy?
Me?
No, I mean anybody.
Oh, thousands.
You know? Right. So you ask that guy, well, I don't know, you know? They don't understand. I'm not going to say, well, you haven't paid your dues. I'm never going to say that in this business, because there's no rules.
No.
There are no dues.
Oh, my God. You're not wrong at all.
There's no dues at all. There's none.
As long as you're putting asses in the seat. I don't care how long you've been doing it. There's no
rules at all. Yeah. Okay.
I had a kid in an open mic the other night try to argue with me about that, what we're talking about right now. I was saying exactly the same thing. And his point was like, well, some of these people work really, really hard and they go to all the open mics and they do all the stuff, but then they don't get spots. I'm like, well, what have they done to make themselves marketable?
Or welcome to the business, pal. You think everybody that's been doing what they're doing you're the first guy to come along, congratulations, in this business that's not getting a fair shake.
Yeah.
I'm finally lived long enough to meet that guy.
I listened to 45 minutes of it the other night.
See, and people don't understand. Here's the other thing, too. I work with a guy, and like when I do a theater show or I do some local shows in PA and stuff, I might get some guys that are halfway decent, and I put them on there as an open. Usually when you go in, they go, hey, you're going to come in, you're going to perform. Hey, can I throw a couple of guys up on this thing, whatever? Now, when I do my big theater shows, I just handpick the one guy that's good that maybe do like 10, 15 minutes. So this guy gets up there, and see if you can finish this joke. He closes with this joke. He says, you know, my ex-girlfriend has a tattoo of a seashell on the inside of her thigh. Okay? Did anyone know the answer to that joke?
Nice clam?
No.
Some kind of clam reference.
No. He says, listen, you can't see the ocean, but you can smell it, is what he says.
Okay,
now, that
okay.
joke, as you know, is 900 years old.
Sure.
He closes with it. So I said to him, I said, you know, you need the drop that joke. I mean, because it's an old schmucky joke.
Sure.
He goes, well, you know, I wrote the joke, so I think I should stay with it. I said, dude, when you start to get into the joke, some guy yelled out your punchline from the joke.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, well, I was here with you last year. He must have saw me last year.
Oh.
So I said, let me get this straight. This guy comes back. The guy that yells at the punchline comes back to see me. You happen to be on a show again that you may not have been on this year, but it just so turns out that you've been on this joke.
Mm-hmm.
And through the year's time, you know, you've impressed that guy so much with that joke that he remembers the punchline to it. Forget the fact he's coming to see me and maybe remember something I might do.
Well, the reason he remembered it is because that guy's wife has a trout tattooed on her thigh. And maybe it just hit home to him.
He thought, I'm not the only one.
He was like, I relate to this joke.
So I was like, okay. But he would not let that go. So then I got too far, and I went too far further than this than I have to. I Googled the joke.
Oh, hold on. Let me do it.
Okay.
Tell me exactly what you Googled.
I put in there, my wife has a tattoo of a clam on the inside of her thigh joke.
Okay.
And there's some variations of it that might come back.
You know, still a general theme.
You know. But it's a general thing.
You know what the most painful thing though is when you see the comedians who just they've been doing it for 4 or 5 years and they just think that they're great and misunderstood and they just got nothing.
You know, and the funny thing about
and
it
then,
is too,
and they're the first ones to come up and say, "What do you think of my set?"
Yeah. You know, it was. It's just weird because that guy was like, you know,
oh God, this poor guy.
I mean, it's all over the place. All over the place.
It's his closer?
Yeah.
Oh, I shouldn't laugh at that.
It's closer. And I thought to myself, dude, you know, he's telling me he wrote the joke. And I'm going, and listen, 1989, you could say he wrote the joke and someone would have to go, oh, I don't know.
He's perfect for Star Search.
Well, the weird thing too is like you know, I mean, he wasn't even doing comedy when this joke was written,
right?
So, it's just strange. So, but my point being on the whole thing is, okay, it's like you're not going to fool people that are actually in this, and I'm not no comedy genius. What I'm saying is that I remember that joke. I don't even do regular jokes. I don't even know. And someone says, hey, come up, tell me a joke. I don't know what joke to tell them.
Yeah.
You know, like joke. But that one I know stuck in my head. I said, and forget all that. Let's say this joke is yours. Okay.
All right.
Okay, let's just say, forget that. Forget. Let's say you actually wrote that joke. Do you really want people to your last bit to be a smelly vagina joke?
Well, Joe has a really good bit he closes on about airplane food. He wanted to share that with you before you left. Get your opinion on it.
I gotta tell you, man, you're making a lot of sense to me this morning.
It's like you say to me, okay, so I mean, because you're not even if you that was your joke and you were ending with that, it's not ending on a ha ha ha. It's on a
I remember that one.
What's to leave on that? You know? I mean, if you're in bed, you want to, you don't want, well, that ought to hold you the next time you see, next year when you see me, you know. It's just one of those things where it's like, you know, I'm not saying you have to listen to me about it if you're young at and everything. I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying I just get annoyed watching it, you know.
Yeah.
It's a progression, you know. And like I said, it's no rules, but just because there's no rules means that you know. You can act like an idiot with it.
And the thing is, because there are no rules, people take really stupid risks, too.
Yep.
I saw a guy. It was at a show. He had a guest spot. He was trying to impress the booker.
Mm-hmm.
And he was coming in for a guest spot. He had begged to get it. I was, I believe, the middle act that night. And he comes up to me. And it was in the middle. It was like, I think it was like at some kind of golf club. There was like 300 white people at this thing.
Right.
And this is like an older white guy who's
gotta
talking
know your
to me.
Audience. Yep.
He's talking to me, and he goes, "So I do this joke where I always, try to make fun of the black guy in the crowd, but there's no black guys here. What should I do?"
Mm.
And I looked at him and said, "Don't do the joke.
You told me you'd never tell anyone about this."
No, this isn't right. He goes, "I go, don't do the joke. Why would you do the joke? Just don't do
it. Skip it."
And you're only doing 5 minutes. So if you're worth your salt as anything, you could skip what joke?
Yeah, it's amazing because...
Right to the closer. He waits for this. He goes, "Oh, you, the black gentleman in the back." There's nobody there. There's nobody there. Everybody turns around and goes, "What is this lunatic talking about?"
So he still did it anyway.
And pretended there was somebody there.
He just
there.
Invented a black person.
Yeah, and not only that, he's at a country. He scared them more than made them laugh. Right?
My Jaguar! Yeah,
what you say there's a black guy in an all-white country club, the show's over.
That's it, Francis. Okay, you're that's fired.
That's not funny.
The waiter wasn't even a black guy in this place. It was like, it was the whitest place I've ever been in my life. And I could not believe this guy did it. And I just think it shows the... that there are no rules, but maybe there should be some.
Well, no, I think it goes to knowing your audience. It's like I told him, and I said you need to be able to. And this is the gift that you're able to come up with. If you learn anything from this business, I should call it a gift because I'm the one making it seem like I have that. But you should be able to get on stage and assess your audience right away. Yeah. That's the key to being a good comic. Then you're not forcing, like I was telling these guys over here, if you have 50 jokes, you're not forcing all 50 jokes down these people's. Maybe they may not want all 50.
Right.
You may have 15 that are good for that particular crowd, but you have to be able to assess and figure out of your 50 jokes, what 15 they're going to take.
What when you're assessing a crowd, how, what kind of things do you look for? Like, what are the tells of things to stay away from and things to go for, like when you're looking at a crowd?
Well, first of all, when I first walk out there, the first thing that I do is, like, I usually don't listen to anyone before me because I don't want to be influenced by anyone before me. I don't want to take on what they had with it. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I think a show should be, it should be three separate entities of the show, and I like to separate myself from that. So when I walk out there and I see what's going on there too, first of all, I'm so excited to be out there. You know, it's about looking at them, and it's a feel. It's hard. It's even hard to describe.
Yeah.
Because if you throw out your first joke or your first line, you know, I'm trying not to go, hey, how's everybody doing? I'm trying not to lean on that because that's what everyone, you know, says. Mm-hmm. I'm still trying to find a nice way to get out there and just start.
Yeah.
You know. But when I look at a crowd and I see them and I'm thinking to myself, okay, I look there, I try to see that, I try to gauge the age of it, basically, the sense of the age of the room, because then I know where I'm going. If we're all grown people, okay, that's fine. If it's young people, I have a tendency to believe if it's young people, they're not going to have the attention span, whatever. Older people should say, they have an idea of, like, it's a night out, you know, we pretty much did of our lives. They're not going out Friday and Saturday. They're going out one night. They're not like the young people that go, well, Friday we're going here, Saturday we're going here.
Right.
Older people go, hey, I'm going out one night. We're going to get something to eat. We're going to go see someone else. And with a little luck, we'll be home by 10 o'clock, 10:30. Okay? So when you sense that in a crowd like that too, you know, or what they've been saying, what you're going to do is, that's what I play to. That's what I did last night. I got up there and I thought to myself, hey, look, you know what? Here's a bunch of people that are just out. It's Thursday. I get that sense. Here's a crowd that wants to come to the show, but, you know, they're either doing something Friday or Saturday, or they don't want to be bothered with the Friday set. So that's the attitude I have. I have the laid-back, early attitude about looking at them. I go, here's a crowd that wants to be out, but doesn't really want to be out. They're out, and they want to get home because they probably have to work tomorrow on the Friday.
Right.
But now this is their out. Well, what happened? We went to the comedy show this weekend, so they could have the same conversation with the guy that went on Saturday.
Sure.
And said, hey, we saw Earl David Reed this weekend. Oh, we saw him too. We didn't go on Saturday, but we saw him.
Right.
So it's about being able to go out there and being able to know what they take. Usually when the guy is done before you and you gauge that applause, like I listen to it and I go, okay, that's what it is. Now I got Greg Owens this weekend.
And he's doing a good job, I believe.
What's that?
John Lockwood is the host, I believe.
He's the host. Yeah. But Greg Owens is the middle act.
Yeah.
And he did well last night, too.
Excellent.
So I hear enough laughter through the door. But when you walk out there, it's hard to even explain it. I'm sure I didn't explain it right. But it's just something that clicks with me. I have a feeling I know what they're going to take. Okay? I never start off with anything dirty. I usually start off with something about myself, which is in a thing like, you know, boy, you know, whatever. You know, like the other day I was like, oh, you know, I wore a jacket, didn't think I should have worn a jacket. And then people are like, you know, they then you go, okay, I know where they're at now.
Do you ever like start off with, I know like I'll have like a group of two or three jokes, you know, that I usually try and do up front, and depending on which one gets the reaction, I'm like, okay, now I'm going
to
go that way.
Well, that's a good policy to do, but I've been doing it so long that I really don't know how I'm going to start. I just know that it goes, and once I catch the first smile, then I'm off and running.
Yeah.
I know
the answer to this question is different for everybody, but like in your opinion, how many years in were you before you kind of figured that out?
That's a horrible question to answer because I think I learned something every day from it.
Sure.
Like anything else, man, you know, if you're not moving forward, you're standing still. You know, I don't know if that makes any sense, but I learned a lot from it all the time. But I think within the last maybe 5 years, I've just gone into this hey, dig me mode where it's like, what time do you want me to start? You know what? Well, how much time? Don't even tell me how much time you want me to do. Just you put that light up. And when I see that light, I go 5 minutes further than the light and we're done.
There it is.
That way, if you're ready, if you got everything laid out, you're ready to be done, then that's fine. Then I'm ready. If you need a little extra time, that's it. You'll never have to ask me to stretch. You just put that light up. When the light goes up, I'll just go 5 minutes in there. That's the difference because I like to perform. I love entertaining, okay? Yeah. Not a household name. I've done some television, some really good things, The Tonight Show, HBO, some really cool stuff. But it doesn't matter. The live performance is what makes a comedian. It's actually what makes a comedian.
Absolutely.
And I'm like, listen, I'm out there. I'm going to perform till you tell me when to stop performing. I don't even put a time on it, you know? And I learned that within the past 5 years. 5 years, I was like, look, I got all these jokes. I got a lot to say. I'm never going to have nothing to say.
Right.
You know, why am I going to put a time limit on it and keep going like this, looking at my watch that I never look at anyway?
Yeah.
You know, they put up clocks and all this stuff. I just say, look, just tell me when you want me to stop. When I see the light, I will measure out 5 minutes in my head, and I will stop from there.
What's the longest set you think you've ever done?
2 hours one time. That's way too long. And because the way I work, right. It almost starts turning into a party. But yeah. I was there. I was at a.
You must have been exhausted. The way.
Well, it was
the
funny. I was, and I didn't get anything out of it. Mostly, it was like. It's kind of like sex, you know. You know, you yeah, and then after a while, it's just like you're just moving.
Yeah, I know. You know? Brian yeah. doesn't though.
You know, it's like,
I've always thought like, that. Like, you know, even when I was young, it's like yeah, we went at it for 4 hours. It's like that's too much.
Yeah, you know. At some point,
like, you're not doing it right.
You're just moving
you're
back and forth.
Right.
You know, it's just. You know,
it should be more efficient than that.
but that's what it's like. You know, it's like it. You know, comedy's a lot like you know, like I always. This is mine. I think comedy's a lot like eating pancakes. Okay,
Vinny tell listening. Me more.
I got him now too, and it's like eating pancakes. In the beginning, you go in a place you can't wait to eat pancakes. After your third, fourth pancake, or whatever your personal limit might be, you go, I don't want another freaking pancake. Can't stand pancakes. You know, so that's what it's like. It's like you go in there
okay.
after a while, and basically what I'm saying is after a while, it all starts to suck.
Yeah.
You know, you can have, you know what? You can have 20 fantastic comics on a show. If HBO says, we got the top 20 people
agreed.
Marathon on it, no one is sitting through that marathon.
There's definitely agreed. A fill line on laughter.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you just go, oh, okay, that's good. And especially if people are telling you, we're putting up the best comedians in there. Well, of course.
Yeah.
You know? So yep. now you go, okay, well, I can tune back in later, or I've had my fill of it. But you're right. It's like that. And I said, it's like eating pancakes. It's like you can't wait to dig into them, and then after a while, you can't eat another freaking pancake. You're done
so
with it.
I have to ask you about something just on a side note, because I think this is fascinating. You train dogs?
No. It's funny. Everyone asks me about the dogs, and it's funny because I have two dogs that are rescues.
Okay.
Okay? Gabe, and I have Zadie. And they're rescues from Alabama. I took my
dog. I got one of those at home, too.
Well, listen. I
married her.
That's horrible. He well, said that, by the way.
She's from Alabama. Okay.
Does she lick herself? But they came in, and I took them to teach them how to swim, because your dogs don't naturally know how to swim.
Right.
Okay. And if I knew, I didn't have a thing to put up on this monitor with these dogs, but I'll send you a picture later. But so I took them to teach them how to swim. The dog, matter of fact, if you go on Facebook and look up Team Gabe, Doggy Rehab Foundation.
Team?
Yeah, Team Gabe, like T-E-A-M. Go on Facebook, T-E-A-M. Doggy Rehab Foundation, or just Team Gabe on Facebook, and it'll pop up there.
Doggy Rehab Foundation.
Yeah.
And well, I'm going to give that
a
like.
What kind of dogs are they?
Well, Gabe is a boxer, bull mastiff mix. It looks kind of like Scooby. No. He looks like Scooby Doo. He's more boxer than bull mastiff, and he weighs about 85 pounds. And what happens is, you know, when I took the dog to swim, the guy calls me up and he says, "Hey, you know, your one dog's 80, which is the other dog. She knows how to swim, but this other dog just loves to jump. So he can put him into a dock diving competition where they jump for distance, jump for height, and speed retrieve."
Show my computer real quick. Is this your dog?
That's Gabe.
Wow, that's some height.
That's Gabe right there. Yeah.
Wow.
And, it's amazing. And he is 85 pounds. He's usually 20 pounds heavier than any other dog that has to jump. It's amazing. So we found out that he can compete in that. So a year ago, February.
Hit that again, Joe or Cam. Look at that.
Yes.
That's nuts.
A year ago, and that's Kevin. That's the guy that trains him. And,
Jesus.
And a year ago, February, we went to a place in Harrisburg. They have the outdoor show, and they had a competition. So we went in there, and he won all these first place. So in the year that he had been doing
you
it,
hope,
by,
you
August,
better hope he wins if he makes you go to Harrisburg.
Well, I live there.
You're a Pennsylvania.
So, yeah, I know.
It's funny because he's there and he travels all over. So He keeps winning. He did the same show last year. It was a full year. The same show last February. Full year of him doing it. He won 18 first place medals. Wow. And all these things. Iron Dog. So he's ranked 8th in the world now. Eighth in the world for this dog, for this competition. He qualified for Worlds, and that's the good news. Bad news is the Worlds this year in Dubuque, Iowa, which is the end of the world, by the way, if you've ever been to Iowa. It's almost ironic that you have the Worlds in a place where you can actually see the edge of it falling off at the house.
It's slightly past the edge of the world.
Yeah. So
if you've got there, you've gone too far.
Yeah. So it's like I go and we do that. So but this place in Dillsburg, Pennsylvania called the Canine Spa, and this guy was like, it was funny when he found out he can jump, he says, "Well, he goes, you know, I can train you how to, you know, make the dog sit, make him jump and everything, or I can do it." And then I found out that this guy, you know, he had a dog that used to do it, and his dog had died.
Aww,
and yeah. So I was like, it just kind of bums me out. But then I was like,
have at it, dude.
I was like, yeah, man, you go ahead, because I don't know if I have the time. This guy eats, sleeps, and breathes dogs. Know what they should eat? My dogs eat raw meat. They don't eat dog food. And right. It makes sense, because it's like this. I go to a butcher, and he makes up a whole conglomeration of meat parts, whatever, and they feed it to the dog. And people go, well, why would you feed that to your dog? Because your dog's an animal, he eats meat. Yeah. I don't know how anyone in this day and age can pick out a dog food.
Right.
You know, it used to be, remember Cow Can? You're not even old. The young guy, he's still got jelly on him. That's how young he is. Yeah. He's just was born the other day.
He's a bit moist.
Right. So, but there used to be a thing called Cow
stringy
Can.
Hair.
It came in a can. Dog food in a can.
Yeah.
You cut the lid off. You shake it out of the can. It was
like
shaped
cranberry
like the
can. Sauce.
Yep, and you had to chop it up and everything like that. And now they've got things like this Blue Buffalo, which is a bag about this big. That's $90, whatever.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So the trainer's like, why would you feed your dog anything else but meat? But now you see in that picture, Gabe's all muscle. I might start eating this stuff if I can get past a couple of sheep stomachs and goat lungs. I think I might be able to get past it. But he competes. And it was a great thing to find that out. And when I travel most of the time, like last time I was in Rochester, I had Zadie with me, who's the other dog.
Mm-hmm.
And I had her with me. She doesn't compete and stuff like that, because it's easier when he's competing to do that. So I travel with the other dog. But yeah, man, it's like what I learned from that whole situation is it's a lot like people don't know their potential. No one knows their potential. You know, sometimes you need someone else to point out somebody or something else potential, you know, especially when you're doing the comedy thing, you know, like the guy featured last night. I can't remember his name, and if I did, I wouldn't say it anyway, because he goes, that's the worst set I ever had. And it wasn't that bad at all, you know, it wasn't that bad at all. But he looked at it. I said, dude, man, if you're going to do this, you can't critique every time you're on stage. You're going to make yourself crazy.
Right.
The show you just had is over. Where are you going next? You just move on with it, you know?
Yeah.
And especially, and he's only been doing it about a year. I said, dude, you can't be counting your shows now. You're going to make yourself nuts.
No fooling.
You know?
Yeah, definitely.
So you're doing part-time Vegas too, huh?
Yeah, I'm out in Vegas and back and forth. I'm trying to get a residency out there, and that's what we're talking about with the one-man show and stuff like that, too, because it's a little bit different because it's more interactive. If you want to do comedy in Vegas, there's the Laugh Factory out there. Brad Garrett has a comedy club out there.
Uh-huh.
The and comedy
what
seller.
Is Brad's cell phone number?
Guess what? You know what's funny? They have it. The Comedy Cellar has one out there. There's a comedy called L.A. Comedy Club at the Stratosphere. Joker's downtown at the D. If you want to see stand-up comedy, there's tons of it. Just tons of it. But it's like, if you want to have, you want to be a performance. You don't want to be an act. You want to be a performance.
Yeah, it's a whole
and that's what I'm working on now. Yeah. Because that's more. So people want to be entertained. They want to go, boy, that was goes out and it was different. Now, my act is different from a normal stand-up, because I'm not just going, I'm not a monologist just telling you jokes.
Sure.
And even when you go to a comedy club like that in Vegas, some of these clubs have like 5 or 6 people who are doing like 10 or 15 minutes. Now you get that overload with it. So you stand out from it. That's what I'm trying to do at this point. It's difficult. It's difficult because it's a lot of just negotiating, a lot of talking and everything. And it's really strange. There's my best friend out here. is a dentist out here, and his daughter, okay, was in school plays and everything else like that, and doing all that kind of stuff. You know, she's actually, you know, the guy from America's Got Talent, Tape Face. You know, the guy that was the tape.
Oh, yeah.
That's her boyfriend now.
Cool.
And I knew her since she was this big.
Has she started wearing the tape yet?
Was that?
Has she started taping up her face
yet? Let me tell you about this guy. I went to see, when I was in Vegas, you know, I went to see his show. My girlfriend and I went to see his show, and he says, I'm going to come see your show on Monday night, because we don't do a show on Monday, we're going to come see you. I went to see his show, and it was unbelievable. Unbelievable. Now, there's a guy that can perform anywhere for anybody because there's no spoken word.
Right.
It's a show for all ages, you know? And even right. that guy said, going back to what the guy bitching about the RIT, he says, I did a show and some guy complained about, a thing I did on stage. He does this thing where, to make a long story short, the two guys end up hugging at the end.
Right.
And some guy, and he plays Endless Love. And for some reason, they're coming in, and it's all set up where he brings this guy on stage and stuff, and they're doing all this different stuff, and he has these different things. You have to see the act, but
right.
But the point being, these two guys, hug at the end. Well, one guy, he says, you know, you have the guy that actually, with this New Zealand accent, and the guy that actually thought that was inappropriate, you know, and got mad at him and thought it was inappropriate and walked out, you know.
What are you doing in Vegas?
Well, I mean, what are you doing anywhere?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he took it as, it's just funny. If I played Endless Love and you two just started hugging, without anything, it's just funny. It's some reason, it's just funny.
No, that wouldn't be funny.
It's not homophobic or anything like that.
I'm Brian phobic. I don't want him touching me. I don't want to catch whatever makes his skin that color.
Yeah.
Like that.
What do you mean by that? Where's that
green
going?
Hue?
Oh, you're talking about him. I thought you were talking about me. Okay.
Sir.
Actually, it's not my skin color. This is it's my mood skin, and I'm depressed, is what it is. So. Young guy doesn't even know what the hell I'm talking about.
No, nothing. He does not.
Nothing.
You got anything about slinkies? You want to try to really
I got a Fortnite joke coming up. Hang on there. As soon as I find out what the hell that is.
We're sitting talking about wooden blocks tonight.
Joe, what is a Fortnite?
2 weeks.
Good answer. 2 weeks. Good job, buddy.
You probably learned that from the game.
Yeah, probably
so. You play video games or anything like that? You can. Guess what I have in my house? I have a Wii.
Uh-huh.
I have a PlayStation.
Uh-huh.
And then I have, what's the other third one?
A magic dog that could jump 90
the magic
feet
dog.
The air.
And
does the dog ever just go flying by?
Well, sometimes if I do this thing, like if I stand, if he's sitting there, and I tried to film it. If he's sitting there, and if I have a ball, I could be looking right at you, uh-huh. And I can have the ball. I can have a ball and go like this, and he'll fly by and grab it. The creepiest thing. But the trick is you try not to get that the dog jump all the time, because it, you know, each dog has in order for a dog to do this sort of thing is they have to like the water, they have to love the water,
right.
And they have to have a toy drive. In other words, they have to have
a toy.
That they really like. Now, his used to be the Frisbee,
uh-huh.
But now it's like this fake duck thing.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and it doesn't even look like a duck, but it looks like a chicken cutlet with a couple of duck feet on it.
But if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck,
nothing, it doesn't look like a duck.
All right.
It's funny. And that's his toy drive.
Right.
So so we can't bring that out, can't do that anything. And it's funny. He's the nicest, friendliest dog.
Right.
I mean, it's just amazing. And I recommend if you get a dog, you want a dog, make sure you rescue him. Don't buy a dog. When I was a kid growing up, neighbor's guy, dog would have puppies. Everyone in the neighborhood had a puppy.
Right.
Now, when they talk about people buying dogs and spending all, I don't know that. Now, it costs you a little money when you go to adopt one.
Sure.
And whatever. That's, you know, for fees and everything.
I've adopted two dogs. I recommend it very highly.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. And my dog has sponsors and all kinds of stuff. Yeah, ex-dog. He's got the ex-dog. All it.
Your dog has a shoe deal?
My dog has a vest deal is what it is. And my other dog, Zadie, has a collar. It's really, my dogs. I take my dogs out in the yard. I shit in the yard. That's how bad it is. I go. They're actually standing over me saying, "Hey, you know what? It's getting cold. Hurry up."
You know, we're paying the bills around here.
Yeah, it's amazing. Amazing. So
okay,
I have a
you
blessing
gotta tell
with that.
Me. What does a dog collar deal pay? I got to know this.
Well, basically, it doesn't. It's a product endorsement sort of thing.
Okay.
And you'll never be out of product sort of thing.
Okay.
You know, and it helps us. On the team, Gabe Doggy Rehab Foundation. It helps us to be able to promote them and whatever doing. That's a foundation that's developed to help dogs therapy through swimming and activity. Most people's dogs don't get enough activity. Like that's most of the time, you go out to work because most people work a regular job.
Yeah,
you know, they work a regular job and they leave the dog home.
Yeah.
Some people will come home, take the dog out, and go for a walk or something like that. Or some people go, okay, well, your exercise is you being out of the crate or whatever for the time we're home.
Right.
You know, so we try to be able to alleviate some of that. And some people that are having a little hardship with it, we'll, you know, we get the dog and we exercise the dog for the day or teach them or let them swim or something like that too.
That's
kind of
great.
A fresh air fund for dogs, you know. You remember the fresh air fund sort of thing? Kind of like that for dogs, for people who don't have the means to.
Instead of getting out of, like, the city.
Yep.
They just get
out of the crate. Yeah, so, and it's good. But so they get a lot of, when he wins, it's like anything. He wins, he gets this basket of stuff, and the trainer's really cool. Well, he's not going to eat this, he's not going to eat that, he's not going to eat this. So he'll win that, and he gets a lot of toys and stuff like that.
Oh, that's cool.
We donate a lot of those to the animal shelter. You know, because he's just got so many
things.
So many things. We just donate him to the animal shelters and stuff like that too.
Well, there are four more shows that you could see Earl David Reed tonight here at Comedy at the Carlson. There's going to be a 7 o'clock tonight and a 9 o'clock tonight and tomorrow. Tickets are on sale right now. Visit carlsoncomedy.com or call 585-4-COMEDY. I would like to congratulate Sean, who won a pair of tickets. He's going to see the 9 o'clock show because basically we did a little contest to win some tickets to see you tonight, mm-hmm. Earl, because we're doing the roast battles this evening,
right,
too. We asked somebody to send in roast jokes, and so far my favorite is the person who I want to roast is the fucking idiot who decided it would be a good idea to text in questions. You have to leave the live show to text, stupid. Who's running stuff around there? All right. All right.
You know,
all right. Good point.
We assume that maybe our viewers can afford both a computer and a phone.
Yeah, we're the dumb ones, but that's
we're
all right.
Idiots.
And who's leaving their phone anywhere? How many times are you going, where's my phone, where's the whole thing? I tell you what, let me tell you something about this this comedy at the Carlson, this club. Rochester, New York, and within the area, this could possibly be, and I wish I wasn't here, because if I were somewhere else and I mentioned it, it would have more validity to it. This could possibly be the best club in America. It's in the top five places that I ever performed. It's set up nice. Mark does a great job taking everybody. He actually goes to the thing. The podcast is fantastic.
Thank you.
I mean, it's you're not going to get this anywhere else, folks, with any other comedy club or any other ratty ass comedy night, which is watering down the product that you should be seeing. You know, I mean, take pride in going out. If you're going to a comedy club, like I tell people, it should be like, you know, you going to your favorite restaurant. Okay.
Yeah.
People come to this club. It's going to a comedy club. Should be like, well, we're going to the comedy club. Well, who's there? Well, we don't know who's there. We just know it's good.
That's
so
it.
We're going. You go to a steakhouse. Yeah. You don't know who's cooking the steak. It could be some guy one night, another guy the next night. But you go there because you know the steak's always good. That's how this place is. And you need to. It's only going to get bigger. But you need to support it. You know. And I don't know if I'm supposed to be funny on this thing or not, this podcast. I guess it would help.
I prefer just having a chat.
Yeah, you know, but I'm telling you, you come to the show this weekend, my show, no one has ever left disappointed.
Except for RIT students.
The RIT, and I will take pictures with everybody. I will take a picture with everybody, and we will network and just be a part of it. It's great.
And keep an eye out for EDR 360, ladies and gentlemen.
There you go.
We're going to be back in just a minute with stand-up news. Stay tuned. Thank you for being awesome and watching another episode of the Carlson Cast. Don't forget we're streaming live on Facebook and YouTube every Friday morning. You could also follow us on social media on Twitter and Instagram at CarlsonCast. You can listen anytime on iTunes, Google Play, and we're now available on Spotify. You should also check out an amazing app called Laughable. And on the Laughable app, you can connect to your favorite comedians in a way you never thought you could before. Download it in the App Store and visit carlsoncast.com for information on more shows. And don't be a jerk. Rate and review. All right, folks. It's time for our favorite segment of the week, the one before we go home. It is stand-up news with Ross Johnson.
Yay.
Yeah. My favorite segment is when we just go home.
Yeah. Yeah. 5 to 7 minutes, Ross. 5 to 7 minutes.
I feel like we could just skip this part and then everybody would be happy. But all right. You want some news?
I want some news. Laid on us.
Nothing too depressing this week.
All right,
so
thanks.
I'm pretty
good stuff.
That's good
I'm
stuff.
Pretty excited. I'm pretty happy about that. So there's a new Richard Pryor documentary. This is cool because I like Richard Pryor and I like documentaries. So it's a win-win for me. This premiered at South by Southwest just this past week. It's got Sandra Bernhardt, blah, 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 Mike Epps, a lot of other people talking, Howie Mandel.
Did you just blah, blah, blah the cast?
Well, it's a long... I realized it was a long... I was starting to read it, and then I realized it's like 30 names.
So okay.
He realized he could not be bothered.
Lily Tomlin.
Okay.
Is in there. Jimmy Walker.
Ah, we know him.
So it debuted at South by Southwest, but it's actually going to be on Comedy Central like tonight, I think, or this weekend.
No
so
fooling.
Cool. You can. Oh, wow. So it's going right to
I will set my DVR this evening.
Absolutely.
Excelente.
So we've talked a bunch of times about the different new venues for stand-up with like Netflix and things like that. Mm-hmm. Comedy Central is doing a new series of original digital comedy releases. So these are comedy releases that are basically native to digital streaming via Comedy Central.
It's going to be in there on demand and stuff.
It's
going to
be in the on-demand,
yeah.
Yeah. So they're not going to be on TV first.
So if you have Sling or whatever like that.
Yep, absolutely.
So I take it the ones that get the most downloads to their service will probably get TV airtime?
Yeah, yep. I think they're not advertising that as the long game. I think they're advertising that as like, oh, this is a cool new thing, and this is the medium, and this is the way to do it.
So,
but I think being on TV is still probably the way to go.
If
right?
you're a fan of this show, you've learned something over time. Is that most stand-up specials that you see were paid for and produced by the performers,
yeah. mm-hmm.
and they were sold to production companies mm-hmm. like Netflix. Most of the Netflix specials were produced by, you know, with maybe partnership with a production small production company and the comedian. Or the comedian funds it themselves. This is a very interesting play for Comedy Central because most of their stuff is usually produced by them. So this is an intriguing development, Ross. Yeah, I actually really like this story.
They're opening the door a little bit.
It really is. It's cracking the door for people. So,
mm-hmm. well, and it's
any place where you could get your content out there, especially with a name brand like Comedy Central, that's a win.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's another. You know, it's another venue, like you said, and I think people are up for it, and it's getting to the point where I don't know if people care if things are on TV first or so. Maybe that's
yeah. I don't think they do.
You know
anymore.
What, man? I don't even care that I have cable.
Yeah,
like there's nothing that I care about that's on television anymore, or that I will tune in. There's no tune in. Viewing for me. There is no
except Temptation Island
viewing.
You never miss Temptation Island.
It's called DVR, Brian. It's called DVR.
Oh, okay.
It's called The Great British Bake Off, Brian.
Yeah.
Oh, that's porn right there.
But Emily
that Mary Berry.
Emily Heller is going to be the first to debut on the Comedy Central Digital.
Okay, well, congratulations to
March
her.
8th.
Awesome. This already happened, cool. So it's up there now. Yep. Check it out.
I saw that was on the YouTubes.
Was it?
Yeah. It definitely was.
Why are you giggling?
I love / hate this next story. Pete Davidson, who we've talked about in a couple of different contexts. Mm-hmm. He's always good for some comedy news. He got in some trouble.
Is this better not be about him dating Kate Beckinsale? Or
no, that was boring. I mean, everybody saw that, but that was boring. Yeah.
Well, to you.
God bless him.
To you.
God bless him.
I mean, what ends of the spectrum? Ariana Grande to Kate Beckinsale. All right,
yeah.
Who cares? What's the story?
He's doing well, and for a guy that sort of looks like that, I mean,
looks like what?
Go ahead, Ross.
Looks like
tell
what?
Us. What does he look like?
A frogman?
He's
what?
Very pale. He's a very pale individual. Is all I'm.
Right.
That's all I'm saying. He's sort of drawn. He looks not as dead as Brian, but he's getting there. So got himself into some trouble with the Catholic Church. On SNL, which again I love and hate this story. So he did a Weekend Update segment. I'm sure a lot of people saw this, where he sort of compared the Catholic Church sex abuse scandals involving priests and children, and priests and nuns, and priests and whoever, to the R. Kelly incident. And he said, if you support the Catholic Church, isn't that just like the same thing as being an R. Kelly fan? I don't see the difference. Only like one's music is significantly better. He sort of went on from there. The Catholic Church is not, the Archdiocese of Brooklyn in particular, was not happy with the disgraceful and offensive skit. They're demanding a public apology from SNL and NBC, saying apparently the only acceptable bias these days is against the Catholic Church. The faithful of our church are disgusted by the harassment by those in news and entertainment, and this sketch offends millions. This mockery of this difficult time in the church's history serves no purpose.
I have a statement I'd like to make that might be slightly controversial.
A statement.
Go ahead, Vinny.
I do not believe that there is a soul on planet Earth that owes the Catholic Church an apology for anything.
Yeah. I think in a different faith tradition, and I know I'll preface this and maybe get us out of a little bit of trouble by saying that I know some wonderful Catholic people.
I do
who are
as
Catholic
well.
Individuals. I'm sure you do.
Mm-hmm.
I'll stop waving my hands around because I was warned about that. I'll try.
It's
I'll try
too
to
late
it.
For that.
I
Ross,
had to
just
say it
keep
out loud.
Going.
You know what? Do you do stuff
if
like
I
that?
If I say it on camera.
If you were just to have a conversation with Ross or watch Ross have a conversation from afar, you would think it was that scene from Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas where he was on acid swatting a bat.
you would
just think that is a crazy person over there talking, like swatting at imaginary animals.
He always looks like he's trying to park an Airbus. Just a little bit.
This is even worse that it's
he's
the.
He's just missing all the good stuff.
This is even worse that
all
it's
the good stuff.
This is even worse that it's but the Italian
done,
guy making
I'm
fun of me.
I'm done with
for,
all the good stuff. You
I
missed
did that for
it.
My
the
job.
The Catholic
that's
Church thing, like I saw too, like on the Huffington Post, like the headline was that he was like practically booed off stage when he made that joke. There was a smattering of small boos.
Well,
like the crowd was not at all bothered by it. It was such a little throwaway line. It was not.
And it was probably like one of the cast members' grandparents who came to New York to see the show.
No, and it was a boo like you get when you tell an off-color joke, but people actually like it. It was like the supportive boo.
Well, that's it. You're sort of
I mean, it was like that.
You're sort of making a you're making a sort of pedophile joke. So like. No matter how good or on point the joke is, there's going to be a little bit of a, oh.
Yeah, but doing a segment about R. Kelly.
I mean, in a different faith tradition, I think we would call that some chutzpah there to for the Catholic Church to get all mad at someone.
Yeah.
Bringing up decades and decades of sex abuse that high leaders in the church spent those same decades covering up and hiding and moving people
that
around.
That they're now being forced to admit to.
That they're being forced to admit to. So I think getting offended that someone would bring that up is, that's some...
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know,
some,
listen, you're horning in on their racket. That's all I'm saying. You're horning in on their racket.
So you're saying they should be mad at R. Kelly, not at Pete Davidson.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That guy's got some chutzpah, too.
R. Kelly also put out a statement. Young girls.
All right, what else we got?
Oh. I forgot that.
I said 5 to 7 minutes.
5 to 7 minutes. Okay, so finally, this will be a quick one. But so I hadn't realized that Will Smith has never, ever, ever done stand-up before. Which, I don't know why I assumed he would have, but...
You just assumed he could.
Well, he's like a comedian guy, so I figured he would have. But I guess he did stand-up for the first time as part of his show where he tries to do risky new things that he's never done. Like, he went skydiving on a thing, and it's a Facebook series, so if you don't have...
Mm.
If you don't get Facebook, you won't have seen this. But
don't you guys hate it when your personal butler doesn't know, isn't also a sommelier? Like, you know, it's
like, you sort of wonder, like, at Will Smith at 50 years old, like, what is he?
Has he ever stepped out in front of a bus before?
He has stepped out in front of a bus.
Okay. Ooh. All right,
ooh, Brian with the venom.
I know. I don't know why. I don't know why I said that.
Yeah, what did
Will Smith
ever do to
you? I have nothing against Will Smith.
I mean, I just made a joke about how he's one of the richest people in America, and what he has to say probably wouldn't be that interesting to me.
He got some support from Dave Chappelle. He got some advice from Dave Chappelle. So I brought Dave Chappelle's. Damn it, with the hands.
You brought Dave Chappelle?
I brought Dave Chappelle.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dave Chappelle. Invisible Dave Chappelle.
You're off your meds.
I really am today. So he had some advice. I wanted to know from
Chappelle's
some,
advice
from
was
some
like,
stand-up comedians if you guys thought this was good advice.
Did he say don't do it, Will? Just stay
just
in your
stay
lane,
still.
Will.
He said confidence is key. I think that's pretty obvious. The reason you should be confident is primarily because you're Will Smith. I've been watching you for years. You're actually a funny dude. I've spoken to you before. You're a great guy. That's not the quote I'm looking for.
Smith release this part?
Yeah.
you smell like flowers.
Here's the advice he gave me. He said, my farts smell like roses.
Also, come see Aladdin, April 23rd.
And he also said he'll be front row for the first showing of Aladdin. Yeah, it's absolutely terrible.
He said, you got to have the right shit to talk about. The best advice I ever got doing comedy was from a comedian that was not particularly good, but the advice was very important to me. He said, you are one of those comedians who think you have to be funny all the time. You don't, but you do have to be interesting all the time. You do have to be interesting all the time. You can talk about anything. The more embarrassing, the more relatable you are, because nobody's perfect, but it's fun to be self-aware in front of people. So I thought, you know, you don't have to be funny, but you have to be interesting.
That is marvelous. That is actually really good advice. Everything about going to see Aladdin, everything but the Aladdin part, I'm pretty good with.
Absolutely.
From Dave Chappelle, saying the first thing he says is confidence is key. If I was going to sit down and really start chewing on that and thinking about it, and you go back and you actually watch a Dave Chappelle special, that last one he did when he was in the small room and he was just sitting on a little bar stool smoking a cigarette in front of everybody. That's a confident guy.
Yeah.
And it definitely translates and makes what he says more powerful. And that is something that's very hard to teach. But when you hear it coming from him and you go back and you just think about Chappelle's style, he's pretty much, that's it, the key.
I've always said 60% of it is just being comfortable with a mic in your hand. I really do think.
Yeah, well, you're also not Dave Chappelle.
I'm not Dave Chappelle.
Do you think it's always true, though? I mean, you know, I'm thinking about this as we're talking about it, and you think of comedians also as being funny from relaying insecurities, and I mean, is that a whole separate thing from being able to be on stage and being comfortable with the microphone and being comfortable talking to people? Like, if you're insecure and you're talking about your insecurities, how does that translate to being confident on stage?
Well, here's the thing. If you're talking about your insecurities in a confident way and you're just owning it, that is very therapeutic in a lot of ways, because you're admitting that you're flawed, but you're also doing it from a position of, you're going to listen to what I have to say about what's wrong with me.
Okay.
And in a lot of ways, when you open up like that, I think it draws the audience in more. And I also think that when you do it with that type of confidence, there's more power behind what your punchline is.
I like it.
By the time you get to it, it just is like, oh, wow, people are following you and they're joining because they're like, where is this person going with this? This is like, oh, I would never say that, you know. I would never admit I did that, or I would never do that. And then, boom, you hit them with the punchline. And it's over with. So
fair enough.
I'm with Chappelle on that.
Well, and so, I'm not an expert, but I think for probably any comedian who's coming up, I think the bit about you don't necessarily have to be boom, 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 everything funny, 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 but you have to be interesting.
Yeah.
I think that's probably great advice, because I think a lot of new, you know, especially a lot of younger comedians, the goal is like joke, 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 punchline, punchline, punchline. But if there's no through line, if there's nothing to connect anything, if there's nothing to connect with the audience except for my maybe okay, maybe great, maybe not so great jokes.
Well, here's where this comes, the style thing comes into it. Every comedian has their own style of how they do things. And there's some comics who are way better storytellers.
Yeah.
And then there's some comics who are way better punch people, where it's set up, punch, and they know how to do that and keep it going. Some people are a good combination of both. Like Earl David Reed is a combination of both of those things. That guy, you know, he's very in the moment, confident, does like the improv thing, doesn't let the show stay stale, will acknowledge what's going on in the room and will open up about himself and do those things. But then he's also, boom, and he'll hit you with a couple and then go into something else. So it's style. And I think there's got to be a mixture of both. I don't think that you could do one without the other.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever.
I agree.
Yeah, well, you're my yes man. I expect that.
Yes. Sure.
That's the Carlson cast for this week, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, it is.
That's correct. Ross, say goodbye to everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Cam, adequate job as usual.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Shoeless Joe is back there, too. Good kid. Good job today.
We love you, Joe.
And we will see you all at a show soon. Later, Marks.